So, Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzl Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzl, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Petzl.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzl. Every week I go in and visit with Kevin Miller and have an absolute blast. It's about 30 minutes every Monday. We're going to go ahead and replay that, and I'll be talking to you live in about 30 minutes.
And here we are living the dream. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO, our great friend Dave Petzl with us. Petzl Financial, to talk about news about your money here. So, Dave, we take a look at just the market, having had a chance to watch your report there on Channel 7 this morning. 4 weeks in a row, good news for you, and for those of you keeping track at home or have not decided to subscribe to the exclusive 580KIDO video feed, oh, wait a minute, that only has one camera. Well, more subscribers, more cameras. You're actually, you know, you never bring in your tie. You never wear your tie here. So Dave Petzl with the tie. This must be a special occasion that the markets are up 4 weeks in a row.
It's a special occasion because I thought.
Is it tie worthy?
You are.
Oh,
you
yeah.
are. I thought, no, I would just stay dressed up today. I almost left my jacket on, but I was, you know.
You are too kind. You are too kind. So what do you make of 4 weeks in a row? Good news.
It is good news. And, again, it shows how resilient the markets are. You take two little, if you will, this past week. We also celebrated the seventh anniversary of the market bottom. From early 2009, right? So, I mean, it's been quite a run, and you think about that in terms of, but what about ISIS? What about what's going on in Greece? What about all the pigs nations? What about China? What about all the debts? What about the $19 trillion
plus China.
The debt?
I got a little
We got something there? Okay. Obamacare, all the tax increases. And we forget how resilient the markets are. And whether it's short term, we get all fussed over normal market corrections, which this is what this is. This is a correction. It can go deeper. It may not be over. We don't know. But we get very, very keyed up about short term movements in the market and forget how far markets move over time. Upward, and it always has all of our lives. And in spite of all the problems, you take right off the headlines and figure out how this is just not going to work this time. It always does work.
Dave Petzl with us. Since you brought up our friends, the Chinese, let's delve into the latest news on China. Apparently, China is going on a spending spree in this country, buying a bunch of property. They bought the historic New York Waldorf Astoria Hotel. Looks like they're buying more stuff, similar to what I suppose the Japanese did in the mid to late 80s. What do you make of China? And, of course, as we've said, there's a big difference between Japan and China when we're talking about markets and government and everything else.
Well, there is. There's a big difference there. There also is the same. It's exactly the same as far as fear of other nations taking over. When Japan was doing that, of course, we there were books written everywhere and studies and all kinds of seminars on how to be like them. If we could only be like them more, we would be able to dominate again. And of course, that turned out to be nothing more than a flash in the pan for Japan, as it's been fading ever since. And it really has. It's been a 30-year fade. I don't know if I was in China, though, I would definitely want to have assets in the United States. Much stronger currency makes a lot more sense, and also when you're dealing with communists, you look for places to put money. And I think the United States real estate would be a place you would want to put money, especially for foreigners with the currency transition.
Well, if the markets are so great, why not invest in the markets here?
Well, that is part of the market, actually, Kevin. That's a good point, but it is. They are. They're
one or two occasionally.
You sling enough, and what happens, right? It's just once in a while something will stick.
Yes. It's the law of averages. Thank you.
So you know, it is. It's amazing, though, when you look at, what in the world were we talking about? China, right?
Yes.
China.
Well, the fears of China, and, you know, a lot of folks are a little concerned about this because of the Chinese government, the Chinese economy. and yet they're buying a bunch of things. And you're saying, though, that actually, you know, buying real estate is a form of buying into the market?
Right, right. Well, it is. First of all, you want your assets here, whether it's stocks or not. And there's so much foreign stock buying that's been going on for decades. And many of the wealth, what are we talking about? The Middle East? I can't think of the name of those things, doggone it. The wealth funds.
Yes.
Yeah, they just take all the oil money and throw it in these wealth funds. And sovereign wealth funds, thank you.
Doing well now.
No, they're not, and they're pulling it back out, and that's probably part of the reason that we've seen the market fluctuating as much as we have. So foreigners do buy stocks, Kevin. Also, a lot of the real estate in our country isn't just held by people owning that real estate. They're held by REITs, which are publicly traded on the exchanges.
It's just interesting to see how that's playing out. By the way, oil now below $40 a barrel thanks to our new friends, the Iranians.
Yeah, well, it was below 30. Not too long ago. So we've seen oil pop back up quite substantially, percentage-wise. But, you know, whether it stays down here or continues higher, we'll wait and see. Nobody thought it would bounce clear up to $40, but it has. And just as Goldman Sachs was predicting it to go down to 20, it turns around and rolls higher. And part of the rally this week actually was Goldman Sachs changing their mind. They don't think it's going to go to 20. It's going to go to 25 instead. So we've really seen oil bouncing back a lot. Kevin, this is great news, though, for the oil patch. And I know how much you've been, you know, you and I have talked about that.
We love the oil.
Well, we do like the being independent, don't we? And we do like the jobs it creates. But it certainly helps. But $40 isn't going to allow the industry to boom again, but it certainly is going to save a lot of those jobs.
You know, Dave Petzl with us, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Maybe you and I should take the show on the road. I mean, you don't have a lot to do. We should just go to the Balkans and hang out. Maybe we could do it from a coffee shop or just look at the destruction. And I'm still inviting you to join me as I try and raise capital. Maybe I can get Kickstarter or something like that.
Yeah.
To buy all those old RVs because those people will be coming back.
You just want to own a man camp.
I do.
You just, that's...
Kevin's camp, yeah.
Kevin's camp, yeah.
You know, getting back to, I just have to take a look at, for people that, they save up their money, whether they go to the Fairmont in Scottsdale or the Hotel Del Coronado in San Diego, the Westin St. Francis in San Francisco, the Ritz-Carlton as well, the Four Seasons. You've got this Beijing firm buying up these hotels for $3.93 billion. The New York based Waldorf Astoria sold for $1.95 billion.
Yeah, you know, per room,
that was an atrociously
high price. It was crazy. It was like well over $1 million per room that they paid for that. And it was an astounding price, record price for per room.
Right.
But yeah, you know, it's interesting, Kevin, and people do. They do want to buy trophy buildings. They do. It doesn't matter if they're foreigners or U.S. Those are the buildings people want to own.
How do you, as someone who studies the markets and advises people, caution people against the vanity buy? You know, Japanese bought the Empire State Building at one time.
Yeah, they bought Rockefeller Center.
Yes.
Rockefeller Center.
It's all New York.
Mr.
Trump was involved in somehow. But how do you, you know, on a smaller scale, how do you caution people against a vanity buy?
Well, I the only thing you can argue, everybody has emotion in investing. We talk about it all the time, as you know, on Saturdays.
Right.
It's a constant battle to actually recenter people away from their emotions. And people think they're so doggone smart because they can rattle off a bunch of negative data points. Doesn't make them smart at all. That's not why markets move. But it is something that people do think that. And so as we're looking at it, you think the emotion of something would be, all you'd have to do is be logical about it. But that's part of it, Kevin. You try to take somebody from an emotional and say, well, why wouldn't you want more cash flow over here on this? But people are fixated on certain things, and one of those certain things that people know is what they're comfortable with. I'm comfortable, say, in real estate. I'm comfortable in this. That brings with it a feeling of, well, if you will, they overpay for it. They do overpay for things that they're familiar with. How do you deal with it? You just have to try to be logical about it, and you aren't always going to win that battle. People like what they know.
Dave Petzl with us here. We like knowing Dave for what, 27, 20, 30, 30, 40 years here at 580KIDO every Saturday, 8 to 10, Money Matters. Now, as you know, I've been addicted to the show Billions.
Yes.
Have you invested in the Showtime app or Showtime, or are you still the fiscal conservative?
I'm the fiscal conservative, all but right. I want to watch it, so I need an expert to teach me how to do that.
Or you need to come over to the Miller House every Sunday night. We've got a room on the couch. There's the dogs, Mrs. Miller, Dave Pencil. That'd be a great 8 o'clock.
Perfect. 8 o'clock.
You'll have to journey way out to Star.
All the way out to Star.
Way out
wow.
to Star.
Oh, my. I'm going to need a map to get
so
there.
So you have to kind of take a look at being the fiscal conservative. Is it worth the gas money to go out there up and back? What you're paying gas money might be a subscription to Showtime.
Well, it depends. If dinner's included, then clearly that would be
you bring your own dinner.
Okay.
Yes, you bring your own dinner. So, they've written this series so brilliantly, and Paul Giamatti is so good at it, you just hate him.
Right.
And it's all about the feds. If they want to get you, they're going to get you. And usually, at least, not usually, but in Billions, it's based on some personal animosity. This guy can't be too good. He's got to be dirty. We can't find anything, so we're creating things. Your view as far as regulation?
This is hard because it is.
On one hand, you have Bernie Madoff.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you have Billions. Fact and fiction.
Right. Bernie Madoff would have been the simple thing. We had more than enough things on the books, and he was actually turned in. The SEC didn't do their job. We don't need more regulations. They are already there. In his case, it was real simple. And the reason I want to go into this a little bit in detail is because this is how every particular scheme happens. You write the check to the individual or the firm the individual controls. And the best example I can give you is that you don't ever write a check to Petso Financial. Ever. That's not who custodies your assets. We don't. Happens to be at TD Ameritrade. That's who has it. And if it's separate, then somebody like me can't take your money. It's not there. And so that's the key thing. So regulation-wise, Kevin, it pains me to say that we do need some regulation because obviously people are not always doing the right thing. But the bureaucrats have reached the point now where we sign, when you're opening an account, it's almost like buying a house. There's so many pieces of paper to sign that people don't read what is in front of them. So the regulation has created this environment where people don't even read what it is that they're investing in.
The scary part, and you read about this and hear about this with athletes and people that have big money, is the notorious investor that comes along and let's say you are not an investment advisor, you write the check to them or what have you, and everything's doing well, and then all of a sudden, poof. That's the biggest fear, and is that one of the reasons that what happened, 7 years ago, that we still have 80% of Americans not in the market?
Yeah, they don't understand. I'm not sure it's so much the schemes, if you will, as the general market. People felt let down by the general market and because it did fall 50%. But, again, as it has in multiple periods, just in the last 15 years, it's fallen 50% twice. It's also gone back to all-time highs as well. So markets do bounce back and are resilient. I think actually, Kevin, it's very much an educational gap, and there's so much negativity out there. People are having a difficult time, whether it's – I'm not sure what it is, but we just don't see how abundant things are, how good we have it in America. Everybody seems to be walking around with their chins on the ground, angry at the world, and we just don't recognize how good it is economically. But then when you take it a step further – and you look around the world and you look at the global growth, because these are globally dominant companies. They sell everywhere. And how much the world is growing, we miss this big picture. And I think it's an education gap as much as anything.
More coming up with Dave Petzo
next. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. I'm Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
And we're rolling right along. Dave Petzo with us. Kevin Miller here with you at 580KIDO. So let's talk a little bit about the president was at South by Southwest making his pitch that the FBI needs to look at your phone, Dave Petzo, as if the FBI, the NSA, and others can't do that already.
Right.
What does that mean for personal technology? What does that mean for security and these companies' financial future.
This is a big item. It really is. I'm, you know, as you and I talked here a few weeks ago when the story broke, you know, it's what do you do if you're Apple? I mean, you can't just roll over and create a key. Then the key exists for the bad guys. It exists for everybody, good guys and bad guys. But then everybody has the key to your little device. I think it's a very, very serious thing that is going to take a lot of consideration. Of course, you know, the FBI brought this case, and as I mentioned, Kevin, that was my offense, if you will, about the whole thing, was this was not a case about a drug deal. We need to look at your phone for a drug deal. No, let's go ahead and wait for a terrorist attack where we can all unanimously have the power of the public opinion. Of course we want the terrorist dead, and we want to find out anybody else he talked to, and we want them put behind bars. Well, dead would be better, but put behind bars. We've got to get rid of those folks. We get that, but at the same time, at what expense long-term to our own personal security, if you will, and privacy?
Dave Petzl with us as we continue on here at 580KIDO, taking a look at news about your money. Anything on the horizon that you can share with us?
No, you know, one of the things that people are, if you will, it was really interesting last week. We had the ECB cut rates, European central bankers, cut rates even more negative, okay, to try to, if you will, try to bring back some inflation. I'm not sure why doing more of something that isn't working very well makes it so. They have to come out of government for that, right? I mean, you have to think like government, where our program doesn't work, and so we need to throw more money at it. Only governments think that way. But at the same time, that's going to be helpful in this way to the U.S., and that is our interest rates are going to have pressure to stay low longer because of that, because it is a global, if you will, a global competition. So seeing rates stay low for a while, Kevin, I think is going to be helpful to the economy, helpful to each of our own personal economies as people go out and borrow money.
Okay, so if I've watched Shark Tank 75 times and CNBC sees the profit and I'm an entrepreneur, or I'm, you know, just a person that dabbles in entrepreneurship, what do low interest rates mean to me, the small business owner here in the Treasure Valley?
If you can borrow money, then it means you can borrow money to expand your business at low rates, which makes it a lot easier, of course, to stay in business and to make those payments. So it really does matter. But you have to be able to borrow the money, and that's really the hardest part. An idea, a great idea, regardless, doesn't get funded unless you have collateral, unless you have something there, sales receipts, something to have collateral on. Banks won't lend if it just because you have a good idea, but you have no collateral. And so that's, you know, again, that's the other side of it.
Almost it would be a good time, though, to look at refinancing debt if you have it.
Absolutely. It continues to be a great time. Home mortgages are the classic example, of course, of refinancing.
That's still going on?
There is some, Kevin, there's some. It's most people have refinanced already, and you're not going to try to drop your rate from 3.75 to 3.25. People aren't going to do that because it's too expensive to go out and refinance.
Oh, so, no, they just throw it on the loan.
They all throw it on the loan, they do.
Yeah, it's all free. You're
payments,
good.
It's good, right. I know. But we are seeing a movement in this country, and I think that's a good one, and that is that there's more cash down on the houses. There's less debt overall. People are saving money, and maybe with the last downturn, the last scare, people have been scared into some positive changes. And I do think that's really positive going forward.
Let's talk a little bit more about some of the growth coming up as we get out of the first quarter into the second quarter. A lot of companies are a little sluggish. They've shaken off the rust. What can we expect?
Probably more of the same, Kevin. It's not a vibrant economy. It's not a vibrant profit time for corporations. But I believe we're going to continue to grow, and I think that slow growth on the profit side, that would be acceptable to the market. It's already talked itself down, if you will, that profits aren't going to be there. It's just not going to be this time where the profits are growing as much as they were a few years back. And so a corporation by corporation, it's different, of course. But this last quarter, Google and Amazon, two of the main tech drivers, both of them just knocked the cover off the ball. I don't see that slowing down at all, Kevin.
one other thing that people are really worried about here at 580KIDO, and that is just the printing of the money. We haven't talked about that in a while. And you don't seem to still be worried about that, right?
I'm not. I'm not as worried as others. We have to understand, as we talked about this many, many years ago now, I just can't believe we had the seventh anniversary of the market bottom. But clear back then, Kevin, you and I were talking about this idea that the printing of money itself is not an inflationary item. It depends on how fast it goes through our system, if you will, the economic system. In other words, what is the velocity of that money? How quickly does it turn over? And if it isn't, you can print piles and piles of money, but if it isn't actually working its way into the system, that is not inflationary at all. It just is a pile of money sitting there. And that's exactly what's continued to happen, is the velocity of money has been very slow, and it still is. So that's what we have to watch, not the amount of money we print, but the velocity of it.
And quickly to Terry from State College, Pennsylvania, here at 580KIDO for our great friend Dave Petzo. Now, Terry, you're going to have to be quick because you didn't call early, but good to have you with us. Okay.
Here's quick. Here's fast. David, you often say people worry, 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 and I know that agitates a few people, but let me get a definition from you that I think will satisfy everybody. What about discretion? What about discernment? What about caution? Aren't those words, aren't those descriptions of what some people are exercising? Because not everybody out there worries. And I think people say, I'm not worried, I'm just trying to be careful. What's he talking about? So maybe if you could touch on that a little bit, because not everything's worry, Dave.
Well, I think that's fair. People can be cautious, but the answer is that many people have been cautious for the last 7 years. And then they were cautious before that, and they've been cautious their whole life. My point being, is that is there ever a period that there's nothing to worry about, that you shouldn't carry caution? And I would argue there's very few periods. There are a few that people have carried that. It would be the late 1990s is the most classic example. The other would be you don't have to worry about it with real estate in the mid-2000s. Whenever there are concerns or people are being cautious, or let me just take the reverse of that. Let's throw caution to the wind. Then I would say by definition, prices are extraordinarily high for all assets, and you better run. And that's the concern. As John Templeton said, if you are looking for where the outlook is the best, that's the opposite of what people need to do in investing. And it's hard to do. It's incredibly difficult to do. You should be asking the question where the outlook is the worst, because there is where you will find the true bargains out there. That's the reason why. If people are looking to invest worry-free, then they're looking to pay maximum price. And I've never met anybody that really actually said, what I'm really looking to do is I want to wait for prices to go up, and then I will buy and just pray that I can find somebody else to get them at an even higher price. People always say, I want to buy low. You can't buy low unless there are, quote, problems in the world.
Well, people aren't worrying. They're just basically exercising caution. And that, you know, that's what I'm hearing from a lot of people. No, I'm just being careful here, okay?
All right, Terry.
That's fine.
Thank you, guys.
Yep,
have a good
thank
one.
You.
All right. Dave Petzo, final thought?
Well, when it comes to that, again, that's not fair. He's off the air. But at the same time, that's all I'm saying is that caution is another word for I'm scared and I don't want to. It's a nice word. It's a nice word for staying out of investments that you need to be in, that have created wealth consistently. That's all we're really saying. And on top of that, you have to understand where the money flows. Money flows into markets after they rise. It comes out of markets when they are falling. That's the crazy part. Nobody says as they begin their investment career, I want to buy high and sell low and repeat that behavior. But we do, and we often case it in, I'm being cautious, I'm just conservative, I'm thoughtful. That's all says, and that's nice words for saying, I'm too scared to invest.
Dave Petzo, Saturdays, right here, 8 to 10 on 580KIDO. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, my friend.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. Idaho's Talk Pet Cell on Idaho's Talk Station, 580KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Let's do it on the phones now, 580-5436.
580-KIDO. Of course, we are here live. Hope you all enjoy our replays of Mondays. So far, I've had great response from that. So we're going to keep doing it. I, as long as Kevin Miller will have us in on Mondays, it's great to visit with him anyway. Again, our number, 580-KIDO. And or Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. That's our email address live during the program. I want to pick up on that. What we were just finishing up with, this idea of worry. No, it's, you know, we're cautious. We're not really worried. No, we're cautious, more deliberate, concerned, conservative. Think of all the nice words for worried. Because people feel insulted by saying you're worried, or investors are worried, not cautious or concerned, because it denotes an emotional response rather than a carefully thought out, critical, thinking, deep thought response. And there are times, of course, to be cautious, but it's always opposite of what people do. When we are cautious, when times are, in fact, not so good, you know, it's just it's a little cloudy off in the horizon. That's when people are cautious. They throw caution to the wind after markets have risen dramatically. It's so bright, you got to wear shades. In other words, we buy high and we sell low. And we repeat that behavior over and over. But we put it in this context of caution, conservative, thoughtful, deep thinking. Rather than admitting we may be being emotional. You see, it doesn't matter what time in history. Markets go down. Then markets rise back. Then markets go on to all-time highs. And then they fall again. And then they rise again. And then they go to all-time highs. And then they fall again. And then they rise again. And they go to all-time highs. And every single time, we refuse to learn. Every time. Because we're cautious, we're careful, we're conservative. No, we're worried. We think that if we buy, it'll get cheaper tomorrow. That's what we do. So as we continue to do that, we repeat the same behavior and we ignore history. Markets correct. They rise. They go to all-time highs, and we're not there. Time and again. Time and again. And yet we all say the same things all the time. I want to buy low. I want to sell high. Of course we do. In an abstract, we would talk about investments in anything. How about we just talk about housing? No, I don't want to talk about stocks. Let's talk about housing. We can flip condos in Florida. When did that happen? And when does that end well? There was no worry. There was no caution. Why would there be? With low interest rates, prices rising crazily, the economy's doing great. Don't worry, be happy. When we don't worry, we are investing at maximum prices. Always. There's never been a time that I can think of, except for 1999, late 90s, right? And then for real estate in the mid-2000s. That people aren't worried about something. I mean, all kinds of stuff. In fact, we'll probably pull some of that out later. At some point, we will. We've talked about it all before. In the 60s, you know, the good old days. Gun down the president. That shouldn't be a big issue. Yeah, it kind of is. The Cold War is really heating up. Vietnam's starting. Yeah, not much going on. Riots in the street. Who's worried? You can see why people would invest through that decade, because there's no worries. And then, of course, in the 70s, it gets really bad. We have a 50% market correction. The list goes on. You know, inflation, gas lines. The Cold War continues to bubble. Jimmy Carter, Richard Nixon, our great leaders. You know, because it's so bad today, but we've had such great leaders all through our history. If only we could have that again. And markets weren't as volatile. I mean, yeah, except for the 73-4, 50% decline. It's hardly ever been volatile like now. And we cruised through the 80s, but who would have ever invested in the 80s? We start that decade at 20.5% prime lending rate. Who would do that? So we would have to wait, because we want to be in a worry-free environment. And remember, the budget deficits were just out of control, and the Cold War was heating up. And President Reagan was certainly unsteady and was going to push the button, and launch a nuclear war. Couldn't invest in that environment. You'd be silly. Silly. You know the story. Every time. And then Reagan's shot. We have an 87 stock market crash in a day. A fourth of the value is taken off the stock market. A day. A day. We'll talk more about this. We'll talk more, lots more. Let's not pretend. Let's be real. And let's try to understand investing for what it is. It's not a short-term, in-and-out, I-got-this, timing-thing-down game. Because you don't. You absolutely don't. Our number is 580-KIDO. Let's go to Jim. Jim, thanks for waiting. Go ahead, please.
Morning. How's it going?
Hey, awesome. Jim, how are you today?
Fine, thanks. I hear you guys are having a pretty good week and month so far.
Well, five up weeks in a row wipes out all the losses for the year. What do you think of that?
Yeah, pretty good, pretty good.
That's not bad coming off. Oh, wait a minute. I know. We didn't have a lot of worries. We were just being cautious 5 weeks ago as prices declined, right?
Well, you know, you use the word cautious. I've gotten to the point now where I would use to describe me, basically reckless. Well, you know, I started investing at a perfect time, I think, you know, in 2010 and 2011, when things were coming up, and I bought, you know, blue chip stocks and all this stuff, you know, well established. And now, for one thing, I mean, I've got more disposable income than a lot of people, you know, and I guess I can do what I want to do, but I pretty much go with emotion. And, you know, something will come to my attention, and maybe I don't have the time or the expertise, even though I have a degree in accounting. I mean, I can't look at a balance sheet and do all the analysis and all that stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I use something like if a company's been around since 1899, they're probably a pretty good company, right?
It's survived a lot.
And so, yeah, I mean, and even if you buy at relatively a high point, assuming you're going to be, you know, holding for a long period of time and the market's going to continually over a period of time go up, you can't lose.
Well, and that's true. You can lose in individual securities. That's the importance of diversification, isn't it?
Well, that is diversification, and I do have mutual funds and all this stuff. But like I said before, I mean, so I've got that, and I do believe in diversification.
Yeah.
And of all the stocks I've got, the individual stocks, I've got different ones. And I've got some that I look at and say, why the hell did I buy that? Well, I just bought it because I wanted to.
Yeah.
But in general, over a period of time, you know, and again, if it's a good company and the economy is still hanging in there, you know, you might, I don't know, over a period of time, you'll still win.
Yeah.
And you know, and haven't you even done studies or something where if somebody continually bought at a high point,
yep,
and didn't sell, they'd still be a winner.
After this break, I'll actually, oh, yes, absolutely. I've got one right in front of me here. It's beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. Louis the Loser. Louis the Loser is what we call him. He always buys on the high.
You know, another thing with rates, Now, I bought my house in 85 at 8.5%. These days, that'd be a ridiculous amount of percent, you know.
Right.
And after that, people tried to refinance. Well, I thought about that, but if I were to refinance, it would have cost an extra $2,000. But the way I looked at it is, see, my grandfather always taught me, for one thing, debt is bad. And to me, a high interest rate is an incentive to pay it off.
Mm-hmm.
Not just try to figure out how to keep it at a lower rate.
Right. Right. It's true. It's good. Yeah. No doubt about that. So, Jim, I got to roll to a break.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate you. Thanks for calling.
Have a
good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And our number is 580-KIDO. We do have to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station.
Thank you for joining us. 580-KIDO is our number, or it's dave@petsofinancial.net. Shoot us an email. Give us a call. We'd love to visit with you. Hey, next hour, I'm going to talk some more about the trying to think long term. And just a lot of things have been sitting inside of me, if you will. I mean, this idea that people are trying to time things, and aren't you worried about the market? Aren't you worried about this? Aren't you cautious about that? And the answer is, of course, we're always cautious about everything around us. You look both ways before you cross the street. Say, yeah, duh. Well, you don't just throw caution to the wind and everything, but the idea that you're going to time the market is crazy. And yet, the idea that we ignore that the market goes up, pulls back, goes to all-time highs again, corrects itself, goes down, comes back, and then goes to all-time highs again and again and again and again, in spite of wars, in spite of politicians, in spite of inflation, in spite of whatever is on your, I don't want to use worry because that's a bad word, caution list. Whatever's on your caution list. In spite of that, we continue to allow for all of these bizarre products. You can have market returns with no risk. No, you can't. You can't. You can't. Period. That's really, you can't, period. But we can dive into all the reasons why and all the machinations of why and capping the returns and only partial participation, the fact that you're stuck in it forever, and they're really all the guarantees are on the income side, not on the reality side. In other words, what could I walk away with and what that really looks like for a rate of return and how much commission goes into products like that. We can talk about that if you want. Or we can just kind of use common sense. I wonder why Goldman Sachs, Warren Buffett, all the financial advisors I know don't do that. Oh, the CFPs. I'm sorry. I know some people call them financial advisors, but I'm talking about CFPs because they're not allowed to say things like that. Maybe that would be enough, but it's not. It's not because we all want this kind of thing that allows us to never feel like fluctuations are normal. So we go through this, and we're just like this year, hey, we're in a bear market, bear market, bear market. That's all you hear, global bear market. You hear this in January. It's now there. It's official. Small cap stocks before that, blah, blah, blah. So you're slicing and dicing for where the bear market is. What does that mean? Well, in that vernacular, what it means is the technicians are saying it's going to get worse. We've crossed every death threat or whatever they call death crosses and all these things and Iron Maidens or whatever they are that indicate that the market's just going to keep crashing. And the caution, the worries increase. They're devastating. The headlines are unbelievable. Unbelievable. But weirdly, the market did go down, and then it stopped falling. And it can go down again. But my point is whenever it goes down 5%, we're sure it's going to go down 10. Whenever it goes down 10, we know it's going 15 or 20. When it's down 20, we know we are again going to have the market cut in half, and people bail. And the market doesn't act like that. So sometimes it does. Like a stopwatch, you might be right. But when are you going to get back in? Again, same problem. Always is. I promised real quick I'd touch on Louie the Loser, right? He's the guy that invests regularly, dollar cost averaging, puts
money in on a regular basis for the last 20 years. He has. But this absolutely laughably impossible thing he does is he always buys on the highest price of the year. Every year. Every single year. Boom. He does it. But over time, he puts in a couple hundred thousand dollars, and it more than doubles for a 7.3% return. Doing something you can't do, which is to be the worst possible time and only invest on the highest price day every year. Can't do it. It still works. It's time in, not time in the market. We'll talk more after this break.
Are you ready? June
26th. You guys have a good time tonight.
Don't miss out. The Boise Music Festival. Saturday, June 25th at Expo Idaho. Advance tickets on sale now at BoiseMusicFestival.com. Score early access to a BoiseMusicFestival.com exclusive.
Sold out in 2015.
Platinum pit passes put you so close, you'll feel the main stage shake and the headliner sweat. Or go gold with Cool Zone tickets that pamper you with your own VIP experience in reserve seats next to the action. General admission tickets also available. Special access to advanced ticket prices won't last. Buy your tickets now at BoiseMusicFestival.com. The biggest summer concert in Idaho is back. The 7th annual Boise Music Festival. Saturday, June 25th at Expo Idaho. Advanced ticket pricing ends soon. On sale now at BoiseMusicFestival.com. Don't miss out.
Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for listening. Hour number two of Money Matters upcoming. And, of course, these are my opinions only. We're not here to tell you to buy a stock or go into this thing or that company out there. And we're hopefully going to be trying to think about this and try to take some of our human nature, if you will, and turn it to our advantage instead of just always being a disadvantage. Human beings in investing don't mix very well, do they? Fear and greed, two huge drivers of investor behavior. It is. And we're always better off if we kind of acknowledge those things, aren't we? That we know where our soft spots are. It's when we think that we've got it handled and we don't that we get into trouble in everything in our life. But investing is. It's an emotional thing. I wanted to talk today a little bit about, in our education segment, I want to dive in again on this idea of long-term versus short-term, of why we're always seeing how we're doing as how it's doing compared to some arbitrary index, or how we're doing overall of our pile of wealth. What is our net worth? Because that's that, you know, I'm hero or I'm not based on my net worth. And that's not true. And we're going to try over these weeks to kind of dig in a little bit in this whole thought process of trying desperately, I know, probably impossibly, in a short-term world, to think a little longer term. Because as I've been talking about, are you an investor or are you a speculator? And almost everybody says, well, whoa, that's me. I'm an investor. Are you? Do you want to sell stocks when they go down? Do you wish you hadn't held them? Do you push the button radically every day to find out how upset you can make yourself? Yeah, when markets decline, or when markets are advancing, wow, this is awesome. I wonder if I should, you know, lever up a little bit. Let me put some more money in right now. Take down this money over here, put it over here. You know, I don't like the performance of this one area over here. Maybe we should shift it over here because that's really taken off. That's up 40%. So I think we should chase it with more money. But no, I'm above that. I got no issues with that. That's not me. That's not me. I'm not emotional. We all are. We all are. You may find this really weird for a guy that follows the markets, but, you know, I don't push the button and know what my net worth is every day. And that's where I probably should. Add it all up, get multiple accounts, live or die by it, because it's going to matter a lot what my net worth is today to what it's going to be in 10 and 20 years. No, it actually doesn't matter at all. Markets could be flat. They'll be down. They might be down this year. They might be up this year. I don't know. Over the next 10 years, history says, survey says, yep, it'll be higher. Overall, long periods of time, it always has been, but we focus on the short term, and we act like today is somehow different. And that's human nature also. It's simply impossible to have the same emotional fear about something that's already been taken care of. We might be able to imagine it, what it would feel like. Some of you were actually there, what it felt like when JFK died. Where were you when, right? Everybody knows that, right? Where were you when you heard? Everybody knows where they were. It was a big, fearful moment. All the assassinations, could our leaders, were we going to have a peaceful nation? And there were no more assassination attempts until Reagan. But it was very fearful. And the Cold War was really heating up. Cuban Missile Crisis was a real deal, folks. Real deal. I know. History. Resolved. But you know what they're doing now? They're printing money. They've got negative interest rates. We got budget deficits we can't solve. Those are unsolved problems. And if people want to worry about those incessantly, read about them, hunker down, they will. There's always stuff to worry about. Always. 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 So we try to draw it back to grabbing a story, something that we can, you know, different ideas and look at it. And, you know, for me, a lot of times, it's just these different models we look at. Not models like, oh, I think this might happen. No. What I'm saying is, look back at history. I've actually had people call in and say, I don't want some history lesson. I know the market's okay, but it's going to be terrible down the road. Oh, okay. Yeah, we should ignore history because you don't want to talk about it. You don't want to talk about the fact that it's worked out in the past. That, in fact, markets go down periodically. They rise, and then they move on to all-time highs. Over and over and over again, all the days of our lives. But we manage in this to say, you know, we're cautious, we're whatever. I'm just reading, I'm just thoughtful, and there's more negative stuff to read about. I mean, literally, over the last few years, we've had Shemitahs and blood moons. There's actually a guy that sold a ton of books, some rabbis told us, sold a ton of books about the Shemitah. Yeah, I need to get my financial advice from a rabbi. And I need to worry about blood moons. We had 4 blood moons last year. Apparently, that doesn't happen very often. I suppose I shouldn't have gone out and looked at the blood moon, which is fascinating. Weird. Kind of spooky, kind of creepy. But I forgot to sell stocks the day before. Oh, I guess it was okay, but silly me. I need to get those blood moons on the calendar. We worry about amazing stuff. We can laugh about the people that are worried about blood moons, that are worried about aliens invading, that are worried about viruses. The Asian flu, the this flu, the that flu, we're all going to die. And then we don't. And then we move on and try to find something else to worry about. We can never go back and have that same feeling of fear. Bird flu is going to wipe out everything. Nobody was going to move back and forth between here and Asia. Poof, gone. Long-term capital, you can't have that kind of leverage in the market. Poof, it's gone. currency crises after currency crises, decade after decade. We solve them, but act like this time it's different. We won't. And it keeps people out. Markets decline every 5 years. On average. On average, that's what happens. Not what I mean decline. I'm talking about a serious decline. Okay? 20%. About every 5 years. About every 14 months, by the way. Nearly once a year. The market goes down 10%. Now, when it goes down 10, everybody knows it's going down 20. But it usually doesn't. And all those people scatter off. But they did their job. They got everybody to be cautious, conservative, thoughtful. Not worried. No. There's no, today's show is called No Worries. I know it sounds like I'm making fun. I'm just saying we can't use different words to pretend we're not something. Thinking you're really smart and super smart because you're well-read and missing 300% moves in the market. Sorry, it's not real smart. I know how brutally intelligent you are. But when it comes from an investment perspective, you blew it. Period. Let's not make the same mistake again. So markets decline, bear markets, about every 5 years. We have 10% corrections quite a bit more often, nearly once a year. It's what markets do. It's what they do. And then they go up, and then they go to all-time highs. People don't realize that they make most of their money in a bear market. They just don't know it at the time. Most of the money is made in a bear market. You just don't know it at the time. You make decisions like, I'm going to keep dollar cost averaging. I'm going to keep putting money in. I'm certainly going to stay. But position yourself in buying very cheap assets in bear markets is what you try to do. That's what we talk about. We pretend that. People don't. See, we know by money flows. So all I'm trying to say is, look, we've got to think of different ways to think of this differently. If you had an investment in 1970, because it's such a similar time, so I had this thought. Let's just take a look at it. So we put $100,000 into this thing. Okay, it's an investment. We put it in. Now, the only concern I would have with this is that I'm free to take it out anytime I want to. You say, well, why is that a concern? Isn't liquidity one of the great advantages of investing if you have liquidity? Yeah, and it's a disadvantage for most people. Most investors behave very poorly, so with liquidity, it just enhances their ability to push the button and leave. But we put $100,000 into an investment, and every year we just pull that money out. We pull the income out. And it's only about 3.5%, 3.4% to be exact. It's not a big deal. A lot better than today, though. Interesting, isn't it? But 3.4%, it sounds pretty good today just in a current income. And time goes rolling along. Now, we're going to start this in 1970 because you know why? You couldn't pick a worse time. Couldn't. Rampant inflation, horrible political situation, Richard Nixon, followed by Jimmy Carter. Wow. We think politicians are bad today. They're bad periodically. 1970 was terrible. Gas lines. Super high inflation. You don't think gas lines were scary? They were. I know, it's a historic. 20% interest rate. Yeah. No problem. Yeah. So what are we going to worry about today? Negative interest rates? Really? That's way worse than 20%? Huh? Worry, worry, worry. Fuss, fuss, fuss. Read, read, read. Dig, dig, dig. Get it in you, buried in your soul of how bad it is. That'll help you invest. So let's just be
happy.
And go ahead and throw our money in this. And just go see the grandkids. But I want to pull income. I need money. So I pull income out every single year. We're not reinvesting one single nickel. But the weird thing is our income's doubled by the end of that decade. That horrible decade. I'm up to 7% income on my original investment. It's crazy. Wow, that's just nutty. Now, the 80s were great, so the income went up and doubled again. In the 90s, are you kidding me? Wow. The 90s were rock star era until it ended. And then, of course, we had 9/11. We had the tech bubble. And then, again, as if that's not enough, shortly thereafter, we come ripping through and have a financial crisis. What was our income the year of the financial crisis? 30%. 30% income on our original investment. Now, I could periodically choose to freak out and say, I don't want my 30% because the value, as perceived arbitrarily by, say, somebody that's just driving by, goes, ha, I see that your building went down 50% in value. Whoa. And I just a moment ago, I thought I was getting 30% returns. Perhaps what I should do is sell. Who would do that? Who would do that? And, of course, we know that what I'm talking about is the S&P 500, the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's got the Enrons and the WorldComs in there. It's got global whatever satellite stuff, companies that come and go. Many companies don't even pay a dividend, and all I talked about was the dividend. Do you know what that $100,000 is worth after taking all of the income out at times $30,000 a year? It's a couple million bucks. That's right. That's when it matters, is when you die. But that's not what we think when we go up and go, oh, what's my net worth? Really? That, I can't believe it. Do you realize we've lost $25,000 this month? Did you? You know, I knew that guy out there that was talking about the market tanking. I knew I should have listened to that. Maybe we should go get one of those annuity thingies, right? You know, that where they guarantee market returns with no risk. Maybe we should do that. Yeah, yeah. I'll just check tomorrow. I'll check tomorrow. Let's hit the keyboard and find out what our net worth is. And a goal is to have a rising stream of income all the days of our life, no matter how long I live. And there's many people living to be over 100 years old, and we haven't even touched on all that's going on in science and medicine. It's unbelievable. It's rocket science. It's unbelievable. But let's toss it all. Let's not finish the race. Let's not win the race. I want to lose. I want to start a race, and then I want to drop out partway through. I want to drop out when it doesn't feel good. I want to quit. Then I can be another loser in something that is seemingly impossible to lose at. How is it possible that people do? Because we don't think of it as an emotional battle. We don't recognize the beauty of this. We don't think of it as, are you telling me that I can buy the highest quality businesses with phenomenal track records, occasionally at bargain prices, for as little as like 50 or 100 bucks a month? Yes, I am. And I would be diversified with that? Uh-huh. You could even target it to only having the highest quality companies that pay dividends regularly. For 100 bucks? Yeah. Well, that can't be very good investment. Yeah, well, actually, you know, a couple hundred bucks a month is over the years will turn it into actually millions. Has historically. I don't know what the future is going to be. Well, who wouldn't do that? I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. But what it does is it somehow makes it an incredible opportunity for you and I. When people run around frantically buying and selling, panic and greed is opportunity. Because the average person won't see that as an opportunity. They just want to hide their money. In the greatest income story that there is, that people can play in with pennies, dollars. Okay, you got to come up with $50 a month to play. Sorry, you do. You have to come up with $50 to play, to own shares in the greatest corporations ever. Ever. But we wonder about a pet rock called gold. Should I be buying pet rocks? I don't think so. How about high quality, income producing? You're going to retire in 5 or 10 or 20 years?
Yeah.
And then you need income for another 30, 40, maybe even 50 years?
Yeah.
Do you want that income to keep up with inflation, or do you want a lower lifestyle when you retire? But wait, what are you, idiot? Of course I do. I got to keep up with inflation, duh. I did take some. I do know something about economics. That's functionally what we want. Well, here we have investment A, pet rock. No, I don't think that works. No income. Investment B, we got cash. Well, way too low interest rates and not doesn't fight inflation. We got bonds. Certainly, they fix a nice return. And at times, they are actually a good blend in a portfolio. But, wow, today we're like less than 2% on a 10-year treasury. Very low rates. Below historic inflation. Or we have stocks in the greatest corporations in the world with history of paying dividends longer than perhaps you've even been on Earth. It's the greatest income story ever. But let's see if we can't take that and at times mutate it. Turn it into something awful. Something horrible, because we need to repackage the beauty of this, because sometimes it has these bear markets and it looks a little starved up during those times, and we really need to cover it over a little bit, put some makeup on it. Anyway, so let's put it in a package that we can say, you know, you get some market returns over here, but we never have any risk. Well, that's what I want. That's what I want. I want a high commission product so that there's lots of my money taken out of it. So it has a really hard time performing well. And also, very, very profitable to the companies that do this. But I got to put my blinders on and pretend. Don't lose the beauty of this. It's an income story. It's a beautiful income story. We'll talk more. We'll talk much, much more. Lots of different analogies, lots of different ways to think of this, but we've got to start thinking differently. This isn't trading. This is investing. Don't be a speculator. Be an investor. Our number is 580-KIDO, and we will be right back, Dell, to answer your calls, and hopefully you. 580-KIDO, Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-KIDO is our number. We'd love to visit with you. And also, if you prefer, email Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. Right now, let's go ahead and go to the phones. Dell from Weezer, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
You know, your second hour every day, every weekend, you talk about a educational section.
Right.
And you know, I'm a quite a very small investor and needed a lot of help along the way, and I have had the good fortune of having a young man who has been able to keep me out of some of my more grandiose schemes, but nonetheless has allowed me to take a fair risk at times when he thought I had some money that I could afford to risk.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one example is you've been talking about buying stocks that are perhaps not in the best of view for the moment, but to win in the long run. And
mm-hmm.
and one that he brought up one time was the Templeton Dragon Fund as a fairly high risk but high return investment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a little bit of money in, so I put it in that. And then it really kind of dragged on, and it was giving the dividend that it had promised, but the value of the underlying stock didn't. And until all of a sudden, when I bought it, I think it was 70% of, I've forgotten the exact terms of how he expressed it, but anyway, it discounted in when you bought it.
Right, a discount to its net asset value.
Yeah.
It's a closed-end fund. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, 70% is, now I have found out in more recent years, is an indication that that is a fairly high-risk one.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's very, it's China, Hong Kong,
right, but it turned out that the primary problem with it was that it was involved in some kind of a big lawsuit with a great big investor, the Harvard Endowment Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, one time in the stock report, here's this note that we finally settled with blah blah blah, and all of a sudden, bam, that we jumped right up to 90%. So all of a sudden, just that one thing was what was holding that stock down from being where it probably should have been all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But the net result is I made some money out of it.
Right, good. Yeah.
But anyway, being that I am really a novice, and there are many ways of investing in the equity market, it would be, I think it would be helpful sometime if you would just set on maybe just a five-minute discussion of each of the different kinds of investments that you might use and how what circumstances you look for in being able to use that versus some other. And for instance, there's this something called a spider that I've heard of. I have no idea what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if I don't know anything about what it is, I'm sure not going to buy in on it.
Right. Well, those are called exchange-traded funds or ETFs,
yeah.
And we've definitely talked about those. But
a 3 or 4 or 5 minute segment on some of those more arcane areas might be helpful. One of them I have only heard of it in one exact case, and it was a Class A stock, and I've never heard of it since. And so I just wonder how that fits into.
It actually doesn't. That's just voting. That's just share classes are for voting or non-voting shares, like Google has.
Yeah, well, okay. See that, but that I don't know what that means to me. But anyway, I think you get my point.
Yeah.
It's just go take on one of those periodically and just help us novice investors understand where things work out and where they don't. We had a discussion a year or so ago about me liquidating some stocks and paying off my mortgage. And, you didn't necessarily think that was a grand idea at the time, but I think if you looked at my thing now, you'd say, oh, yeah, there was a hint there that this would be a good idea. So,
right. Well, as you know, Dell, it's not a market timing decision for us.
Sure. Yeah.
Right or wrong, over short periods of time, when do you get back in?
Yeah. But see, your idea of market timing perhaps is a little different than my idea of market timing. So, but anyway, I think you get the point. It's a discussion of some of those other subjects.
It's a good idea. It's a great idea. That's what we want to have.
I enjoy listening to you all the time. And trying to follow through sometimes what you're saying, but being kind of distracted by cooking my own breakfast and things like that, too. So, okay, Dave. Well,
all right. Well, thank you, Dell, and you have a wonderful rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Bye. Bye-bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We have to take a quick break here for Fox News, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436 is our number. There's nobody on the phone. Let's give us a call here. Let's get her going. We've got time left today to answer your questions. 5 weeks in a row up have erased the losses for the year, and they were pretty dramatic. Frankly, it was the worst start, apparently, the worst start to a year in history. That's amazing when you think about it. It's an amazing turnaround. It's always hard when markets are falling to behave correctly, and that's why we spend so much time focusing on it. Good reminders for ourselves. Hey, I also wanted to tell you, shifting a little bit, coming next week, it's something I've been thinking about doing. I'd really like to hear your feedback after we play it next week. And that's going to be an interview I did with Hecla Mining, the CEO, and their VP in charge of operations. I didn't know a lot about mining, you know. It's just, who does, right? How do they do it now? All these things. Is it as dangerous as it always was? All those questions. And why? Why should we buy into that? But what's amazing about Hecla, I just have to say, is they came to town this past week just to celebrate the 125th anniversary of this company. 125 years old. I'm pretty sure there's no mining company that's 125 years old. Boom, bust, all the time, right? All the time. So how do you think long-term, and how do you be a listed company on the New York Stock Exchange when everybody wants to know, what have you done for me this last quarter? How do you think about mines that take decade or two to get going and can produce for 100 years? How do you think about that? What about technology? And for me, it was fascinating. I hope you enjoy it. But the point, too, is I want to hear from you, because what we're going to try to do is maybe get some CEOs of different companies, right? Like hospital. Do you know what they do? I don't know really what they do and what kind of pressures they're facing. We can guess. You know, they have pressures of costs and the government leaning on them and things. I think it would be fascinating to talk about the future of healthcare from a hospital CEO's perspective. Right? It's things like that. So I want your feedback on that. We're going to try to find some different ones and that might be interesting for everybody. So, but anyway, that's next week. I have to tell you, one of the things that kind of led to this, I was out at, I had an opportunity to last week go out to tour the Simplot facility. They make French fries, yeah, and some tater tots and stuff like that, but mostly it's French fries. It's like the Jetsons. It's unbelievable robotics. Unbelievable speed, unbelievable millions of pounds, 5 million pounds a day are processed of potatoes. The automation, the forklifts driving themselves around. Seriously, there's no drivers of them. Do they just drive to one particular place? No, they actually seem to have the ability to go, yes, to areas. They see people, they'll stop, they'll get back to their task. They don't. So you have a couple human beings, but they didn't. It looked to me like you didn't need anybody there. Pick up the pallets, take them over, wrap them, put them on a truck. Not a human being controlling them. They control themselves. And when they get tired, meaning they're out of juice, they plug themselves in. Pretty amazing. And it's just the beginning of all the robotics and everything. It's just it's frightening what people are going to do in the future. It's opportunistic. It's amazing. But what an amazing thing in technology. And all of agriculture is affected tremendously. And we don't think of it that way. We don't think of that in mining, how technology affects us. Yeah, sure, we got that for Googles and computers and stuff. Maybe even we understand a little bit of laser surgery or stuff. But the effect is massive, and it's just getting going. No, just getting going. Our number is 580-KIDO. We have got to take a quick break here. And when we come back, please do give us a call. I see somebody tried to ring in, but apparently got caught off or something. Try again. We have a free board. Love to visit with you in our big upcoming final segment. Give us a call. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. With Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580-KITO.
Hello, welcome. Final segment upcoming. Do give us a call if you'd like to chime in. It's 580-KIDO right now. Let's go to Gary. Gary in Meridian. Gary, how are you?
Very good.
Good.
I've been looking into electric cars and lithium-ion batteries, and I was wondering if you had followed that at all.
Well, it's kind of hard not to with Tesla, right?
Yeah, Tesla's very expensive, but they're working on lower price ones, and I was just wondering.
Well, and the big thing with Tesla now, or if you will, the thought process here is that Tesla is going to basically become a battery company, right? In other words, a provider of these amazing batteries. That's what I think it's. I think that's the biggest function of the huge facility they're building near Reno.
That's right.
Yeah. Is these lithium batteries. So they can't consume all of them, and I think that they're going to try to jump out in front because the batteries are obviously the thing that's going to make it so it works, that we can plug it in, and it will not run out of juice very quickly. It will last and last and last. So battery technology is incredible, and Tesla's done a very fantastic job on it. They're trying to stay ahead of that. So as far as that goes, that we're all aware of that, but did you have a question regarding that?
Nothing more specific. There's several companies coming out with new electric cars,
mm-hmm.
and so I've been trying to decide if any of those are a good thing to be looking at as a possible investment, or if it's too early to even figure what's going to happen on that.
I don't know what's going to happen outside of Tesla and then the big companies, right? I mean, they're all working on it too, and I wouldn't count them out. They've got massive resources and already have built the facilities. So I think that they're all doing catching up very quickly, and they can do it much more, much less expensive than Tesla is. So, and I think companies like BMW are really nipping on their heels now with much lower cost cars that go fast and go far, just like Tesla does. So I know Tesla's working on a 30,000. I believe it's about a 30,000 is their target for the next, for out a few years from now where they can hit the mass market. But we'll have to see if they're successful. I admire Tesla, but I certainly think it's an extraordinarily high-risk investment. Everybody's nipping on their heels, and of course they continue to lose buckets full of money. So it's all betting on the future. And with so many companies in that business, whether Google gets into it with their autonomous cars, Apple's taking a look at things. I don't know what's going to happen here, but there's a lot of money being spent on what will be a massive changeover in a consumer product. We'll see who survives. It will be very interesting over the next 10 years to see what companies literally just curl up and die and you thought they were amazing, or companies that rise up you'd never heard of. Or they were surprised by, you know, Ford or Government Motors coming out of nowhere and doing real well.
Appreciate the input.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye. And the technology is astounding. It is and it's coming at light speed. And this is going to be, in my mind, some of the trickiest investing when we think of trying to stay long-term, is the fact that so many things are obsolete. Let's bear in mind, as we think about investments, that there are very few technology companies that survive and thrive over long periods of time. The big winners today often aren't the big winners tomorrow. And when we're all sure of a certain technology being awesome, one of the things that, and you're right, I mean, how can you miss on robotics, for example? Of course it's going to be AI, artificial intelligence. Of course it is. All the whiz-bang medical stuff. Of course. And most companies in that space won't exist. They won't exist. Just like computers, just like automobiles, the big shifts in technology, manufacturing, et cetera, most companies do not survive. They simply don't. They absolutely don't. So we made it five in a row. What do we do from here? No idea. No idea. The technicians will tell you it's good, it's bad, it's whatever. Let's remember what the technicians told us 5 weeks ago. It's all bad. All year long, it's all bad. Drawing squiggles on a chart is not investing. That might work day to day for trading. It doesn't work all the time for sure. Obviously, it didn't work at all 5 weeks ago. But what really all this chitter-chatter, we're going to go to the charts and all this nonsense. To indicate what? That Procter & Gamble isn't going to raise its dividend for the 60th year in a row next year? To indicate what? All these high-quality corporations that you need to diversify? Look, it's not that hard a game, but we pay attention to the wrong things. Owning quality. Owning safety. Owning it long-term. That's kind of the formula for massive success. I know. It kind of fits easy on a bumper sticker and works. It's not that complicated, but we make it so. I hope you all have a great weekend. Talk to you next week.